Welcome to the New Point Community Church Podcast. This message is part of our series, The Hustle. You're probably familiar with the shell game. You know, the one where a con artist on the streets cheats you out of your money by moving the shells around while you're trying to keep track of which shell has the ball under it. You think you have it figured out, but when the shell is lifted up, the ball is gone and so is your money. Sometimes dealing with personal finances feels like that. We feel hustled by trying to keep up with the bills, expenses, the taxes, and the Joneses. But it seems like the more we hustle to try and keep up, the more we get hustled. But there's good news. God has a plan for your financial freedom, and we're going to share it with you. Enjoy today's message.
Well, welcome to New Point. We're in a series called The Hustle, and we're in week 3. And so if you've missed any of those, I encourage you to download the podcast and be able to catch up with us. But we're glad that you're here today. Now, we're talking about the hustle because the fact of the matter is we've all experienced it at one time or another in our life. We all have felt like we've been taken advantage of, if not just in life in general, specifically in the area of our finances. We've all walked away from something with a bad taste in our mouth, thinking, you know what, I just got hustled. And I think that's one of the reasons why Jesus talked more about money and stuff than he did any other thing. And it's not because he needs it from you. It's because it's a direct line to your heart and my heart. That it really drives our behavior. And he doesn't want stuff to have you. He's okay with you having stuff. He just doesn't want stuff to have you. And so what we're learning is this. Is that you and I need to be able to experience financial peace. Because if you have financial peace, then it allows you to be able to experience peace in every other area of your life. And what we've learned is this. Being able to manage money, manage stuff wisely, is 20% knowledge and 80% behavior. So the things that we're looking at are not complicated, but they are challenging to implement in our life. And last week I shared with you that's why systems are so important. Because here's what's true about systems. Your system is perfectly designed to produce the results you are getting. And so if you find yourself in financial dire straits or stress or not experiencing peace, you need to be able to come back and look at your system. And we did that last week. And I would encourage you to be able to do that. Because if you want better results than what you're getting, then you have to look at your systems. Because systems create behaviors. You see, here's what we have to learn. Talks don't create behaviors. That's why we get frustrated with one another in our marriages, right? You've had that talk with your husband, you've had that talk with your wife, and then what happens is it pops back up because talks do not create behaviors. Systems create behaviors. And so we have to be able to come back and we have to be able to develop those. Now, it takes discipline to be able to follow a system. You know, one of the sayings that's out there today is love the process and the process will love you back. But it takes discipline to be able to follow a process. And that's what the Hebrew writer is talking about when he says, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Because for you to follow a system, for you to follow a process, you have to say no to some things, and that can be painful. Later on, though, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace. That's what we're after. And peace for those who have been trained by it. Now, here's what we need to realize, okay? And maybe you already realize this, but it's so true. Our culture is constantly reminding us of what we don't have. It flashes up everywhere. On the flat screen, on your computer, on your iPhone, on Facebook, all over the place. Our culture is constantly reminding you and I what we don't have. Though we have food, we have shelter, we have clothing, we have a car, we have those things. But everything out there today is saying to you and me, you know what? There's something better. There's something more. You need to upgrade. You see, we live in a day and age today of where we don't wait for things to break down. Right? I mean, we wait for the new item to come out. And whenever that new item comes out, guess what? We end up upgrading. Because culture is telling you, is telling me, it's out there saying you need to be able to upgrade. And it reminds us what we don't have. And so the proverb writer writes this, and I think it's so true and applicable to all of us. It's healthy to be content. It's healthy to be content. But envy will eat you up. Wow. But envy will eat you up. And so what is he talking about here? Well, let me just clarify some things for us. Envy is not desire. Desire is good. Envy is not ambition. Ambition is good. You ought to be ambitious. You ought to work for that which is good. Okay? Envy is not a dream. I hope that you do have dreams. Okay? Envy is not setting goals. I hope that you do have some goals in life. I hope that you have dreams. I hope you have ambition. I hope you have desires. All of those things are things that God puts in you and me. And so envy isn't that. Let me tell you what envy is. Envy is resenting other people who have something already and thinking that you can't be happy until you get it. That's envy. And it will eat your lunch. It will eat your lunch. And both of those are a lie. Because you see, what happens is culture is constantly reminding you and me what we don't have. And what we end up doing is we end up comparing. Maybe with a sister-in-law, maybe with a brother, maybe with a mom, maybe with a dad. I don't know. Maybe with a friend. And what we have to understand is comparing is the root of envy. It's the root of envy. It just fuels envy in an unbelievable way. And if you can get rid of comparing in your life, then what happens is you'll get rid of envy in your life. And so he says here, it is healthy to be content, but envy will eat you up. Contentment is the ability to enjoy what you have while you're working towards those goals. It's being able to realize that you have much and that you can enjoy what you have while you're working towards those goals. Because sometimes when we hear the word, and I'm going to help us with this today, sometimes when we hear the word contentment, we think of laziness, slothfulness, you know, kind of aloof, and that's not true. And so what we have to understand is that comparing is the root of evil. And awareness fuels discontentment. And so culture, advertisement, media, all of that makes you and I aware of what we don't have. And we see somebody else that has something. Maybe they have something that's newer or brighter or shinier. And guess what? Ours still works fine. It's still good. It's still capable. It's still dependable. But there's something that begins to turn in us that makes us discontented. And the reason why we're discontented is because we're aware of what is out there. And what happens is we think that getting that or getting more stuff will satisfy us, but it won't. because you can't satisfy an appetite. You see, what happens is when you feed an appetite, what happens is it expands. It grows. Feeding it doesn't shrink it. It just enlarges it. And we live in a world where someone is always wanting to feed your appetite and my appetite for more. They're always telling us what we don't have. And so what happens is I'm never really fully satisfied with what I drive. It's only a year old. It's only 3 years old. It's still solid. It's still good. But my neighbor just got a brand new car. And so I want one. And so we're never satisfied with what we drive or even where we live. Maybe we go to somebody's house and they remodel their kitchen or whatever, and we come back and we think, man, you know, my kitchen's still the same old kitchen. It's been that way for 10 years. Or what we wear or what we do. And so what happens is your appetite and my appetite is constantly being fueled by this awareness of what we don't have. And I'm not saying that advertisement and marketing is wrong. I mean, you have people who have to do their job. But what I am saying is this. There's something unsettling about having too much credit card debt. There's something that is disturbing about not having any savings because we've bought so much stuff. There's something that is bothersome about no financial margin. Because no matter how much you make, no matter how much I make, if you and I don't have margin, we don't have peace. If we're not trained, we're not going to have peace. That's what the Hebrew writer said. And peace is found in the margin. When you have financial margin, you have peace. When you don't have financial margin, you have pressure. You have panic. You have problems. And there's something unsettling that I acquire more and more stuff that though I may feel generous in my heart when I have opportunities to contribute, I can't. I can't give. I can't contribute because I have no margin. And so what happens is that's unsettling. And yet what I want us to know is not all discontentment is bad. Sometimes it's good. If you have a bad habit and it's taking you down, and you've just said, you know what? I'm sick and tired of living this way. I'm sick and tired of it taking this or taking that. And you know what? I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to change. That's a good thing. Or maybe you're discontented because you're stuck in your marriage. And you say, you know what? We're stuck. And you know what? We haven't really connected for a long time. So you know what? We're going to do something about it. We're going to get some counseling. We're going to start going on dates. You see, discontentment and dissatisfaction have brought some great things in people's lives. And not only in people's lives, but in our world. Discontentment has led to some of the greatest solutions in the world, like clean water, like dealing with poverty or illness or jobs. And what happens is there was a dissatisfaction with the status quo. Somebody saw things as they were and said, this shouldn't be. We can't continue to live like this. This can't continue to happen in my neighborhood or in my community or in my world. And they saw what was, but they also saw what could be. And so that discontentment led them to change their world, to make a difference. And yet these people are not controlled by the discontentment of other people thinking that when I get that or when I have that or when I go there, I will be happy. No, these people are driven by a different discontentment of what is and what could be. And so they're willing to make sacrifices. They're willing to invest their lives. They're willing to give. And so the answer to taming the beast in you and me that our culture wants to constantly feed, which is discontentment, is not just deciding, you know what? I'm going to choose not to be discontented. That's not the answer. The answer is to be able to replace it with something. See, what happens is the way in which you change a bad habit is you don't just quit the habit. You know what you do? You replace the habit with a good habit. You replace that bad habit with a good habit. And so Paul had a young man that he was mentoring, that he was training up. And his name was Timothy. And he was dealing with this issue because it's always been there. It's always been in mankind that we just kind of long for that which is more. And we see that which is around us, and it creates a sense of discontentment. And so we're going to jump into this, and you can follow along in your note-taking guides or just watch up on the screen. But here's what Paul says, and we're kind of jumping in the middle of his conversation, but here's what he says. But godliness with contentment is great gain. Now, don't be afraid of the word godliness. Godliness just basically means to be like God. And what is God like? He puts others first. He loves people. He gives to people. Okay, he cares for people. You no doubt are familiar with that verse. For God so loved, he what? He gave. And what Paul is telling Timothy here is godliness, being like God, with contentment is great gain. Now the word great there means mega. Mega gain. And so what he's telling Timothy is, if you want to have mega gain in your life, then you need to be able to be like God. You need to become more like God. You need to put others first in your life. You need to be loving. You need to be serving. You need to be giving. And so for that to happen, I have to be content. Otherwise, it's going to be focusing on me and not others. And so Paul says, but godliness with contentment is great gain. And then he says these powerful words. For, okay, we brought nothing into the world. You know what he's saying here? Here's what I believe that Paul was saying. You were perfectly content before you got into this world. You were lovable, you were adorable, you were precious, you were all of those things. You were cherished. And Paul is saying that you have value way beyond what you have. And yet what happens is when we grow up as adults, we attach our value to what we have. And yet when a baby is born into this world, we don't value the baby by what they have, do we? We value the baby just because of who they are. And yet what happens is we live in this culture that makes us aware of things we don't have. And that awareness fuels discontentment. And so what happens is we think, I got to have this, I got to have that to be able to feel valued, to feel loved. And Paul is saying, hey, you know what? When you absolutely had nothing, when you were butt naked, you were valued, you were adorable, you were lovable. And then he goes on to say this. He says, and we can take nothing out of it. Basically what he is saying is, you know what? You're going to leave it all here. And so here's my question for us today. All right? What are you leaving other than stuff when you die? What are you leaving other than stuff? Because what happens if we're not careful, that's what we're accumulating and that's what we're consuming is stuff. And this needs to be front and center in your life and my life and all of our lives. What are you leaving other than stuff? Because what happens is if you will make this the center of your life, front and center of your life, what happens is it will curb your desire for more stuff. Because you might just end up being one of those people who devote themselves because they became so discontented with the way that things were and they said this should change, that you throw yourself into something and you become devoted to something that, you know what, you would experience a great gain in your life. So let me ask you a question. Will the world gain anything by you being here? Will your community experience any gain because of you being here? Will New Point experience any gain because you were here? Or are you just going to leave stuff? Are you just going to leave stuff? Then he goes on and he explains it, and here's what he says. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. Now, here's what you need to understand about Paul. He's not saying that all you and I need is food and clothing. What he is, listen, the best illustration that anybody can have is your own life. If you constantly have to use somebody else as an illustration, then you need to look in the mirror. And Paul is saying, I'm going to illustrate it to you. I'm walking my talk. Now, I realize that Paul is single, and he has a couple of friends, but what he's letting you and I know is, you know what? If I just have food and clothing, I'm pretty content with this. And so, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be devoted to other people. I'm going to make sure that I leave something more than stuff, because I'm going to practice what I preach. And so the question becomes, what did Paul leave? Well, let me tell you what he left. He left a bunch of letters. Matter of fact, we're reading part of it today. He left letters that has shaped culture and the world for over 2,000 years. He had teachings that literally dismantled, listen to me, that literally dismantled Rome and its empire. You know what else he did? He left a string of churches all throughout Asia Minor that were communicating hope and freedom and a God who desperately wanted to get to know them. And if you want great gain, you have to take your focus off of stuff. And again, there's not necessarily anything wrong with stuff. It's just that in the end of your life, you have to ask yourself, what am I going to leave? Is it going to be stuff? Or is there going to be something more? And so what I would ask you is, what needs to capture your attention other than stuff? What needs to break your heart other than not having something? Where should you shift your energy? And so Paul says, you know what? Food and clothing is going to be enough for me. I'll be content with that because I want to leave something other than stuff. And he goes on to say this. He says, those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap. He basically says, you know what? If you just constantly go after more and more and more and more just for stuff, then what happens is you're setting yourself up for a trap. People who make stuff their focus, setting themselves up for a trap because there's specific temptations and there's specific traps that you and I can fall in. You might say, well, what are they? Well, if you would know them, then they wouldn't be temptations. They wouldn't be traps. But it might be the trap of losing your family, losing your health. It could be multiple different things that a temptation can come along and be able to trip you up and to trap you. Here's what he goes on to say. And into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. Wow. What happens is you're pursuing stuff and you're compounding all this stuff. And you're thinking, you know what? I am the envy of our neighborhood. I am the envy of our community. And then one day all the props fall out. and you find yourself in ruin and destruction, and everything around you is falling apart because you were focusing on stuff. On stuff. And see, it's very, very easy for us, because I was reading a survey from the Pew Group. The number one thing that Christian families say about their finances is to provide for their family. That's the number one thing. You know what number two is? To support the lifestyle I want. That's the number two priority in people who say that they follow Jesus, that they want to do with their stuff. I want to be able to support the lifestyle I want. Listen, when you and I are there, it can cause you to do harmful things and foolish things. And it can plunge you into ruin and destruction. He goes on to say, for the love of money, the love of stuff, is the root of all kinds of evil. Now, it's not that stuff is evil. It's not that money is evil. People say money is evil. No, that's not what it says. It says the love of money. That means that it's your focus. It's your pursuit. It's your ultimate goal. Paul goes on to say, some people eager for money, eager for stuff, have wandered from the faith and have pierced themselves with many griefs. And I've seen this happen. And guess what happens? They blame other people. They blame other people. But it was for the love of money. And yet nobody's willing to say, I love money. I love stuff. And yet what Paul was telling Timothy here is, you know what? If you're not careful, it'll take you away from faith. You can pierce yourself with many griefs. But then he moves in and he says this to Timothy. He redirects it and he says this, but you, man of God, or man of woman, or woman of God, he says, flee from what? Flee from all of this. Flee from all of this and what? Pursue righteousness, right relationships, because here's what I know, if you put stuff above people, you don't have good relationships. The people in your life feel cheated by you. He says, pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, endurance, and gentleness. And here's what I want us to get, okay? Contentment is found in redirecting our pursuit. It's found in redirecting our pursuit. Of saying, you know what? I'm going to redirect my pursuit. It's not going to be for stuff, though stuff is not wrong. It's going to be for the greater gain. And now he gets real practical here, because the first part, he wasn't talking to rich people. He was talking to people who looked at rich people and said, if I only had what they had, if I only could have their stuff, if I could only live in their house, if I could only drive their car, if I could only have their clothes. That's who he's talking to. But now he's talking to the rich folks, okay? Because he goes on to say this, command those who are rich in this present world. Now, who would that be? That would be us. Do you know if you make $37,000 as a household, you're in the top 4% of the world? If you make $48,000, you're in the top 1% of the world? Let me even break it down. If you have a cell phone, a car, and a place to lay your head, you're rich. You're rich. He says, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant nor to put their hope in wealth. That's not what life is all about. Don't put your hope in wealth. Don't be arrogant about what you have. Why? He says, because it's so uncertain. It can be here and gone just like that. It can disappear. He says, but put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. You see, God wants you to enjoy stuff. He's not against stuff. He just doesn't want stuff to have you. He doesn't want stuff to be the center piece of your life. He doesn't want it to be front and center in your life because he knows that it will rob you of everything that he has for you. And so he continues to say, command them to do what? Good. You know why? Why does he need to command us rich people to do good? Because we can do, we can go through a whole season of life and not do good. You know why? Because we're consumed with our stuff. We got so much to do, so many opportunities, so much to enjoy that you know what? We've crowded other people out of our lives. And so he says, you know what? Get their attention. Get their attention. Command them to do good. He goes on to say, to be rich in good deeds. Not just something that makes you feel good for the moment, but to be rich in good deeds. And to be generous and willing to share. You know what he's saying? Command them to live a life of generosity. That it's not just an act here and an act here and an act here that kind of eases our conscience and makes us feel good. But he says, no, command them to be generous and be willing to share. And then Paul says this, in this way, okay, here's a system, here's a process. In this way, he goes on to say, they will lay up treasures for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age. What's he saying? There's more to this life than living and dying. He says, if you do this, then you will be leaving more than just stuff. You'll be leaving true treasures. Things that are valuable, things that are useful, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. You know what he's saying here? He's saying if you really want to live, the front and center of your life cannot be stuff. You have to put something else out in front of that. There has to be something better than stuff. He says, if you really want to experience life, it's not in more stuff. If you want to experience a great gain in your life, a mega gain in your life, it's not more stuff. You see, here's what I believe. The value of life is always measured by how much of it was given away. That's the value of life. And every funeral that you and I attend reminds us of this. That the value of your life, the value of my life, is how much you gave away. You know, Steve Jobs says this, nobody's arguing in the cemetery who was the wealthiest. See, true life is never measured by how much you and I accumulate and how much you and I consume. It's godliness with contentment that is great gain. Let's do this. Would you join me in this journey? Let's be different. Let's not conform to everybody around us. Let's be different. Let's reprioritize. Let's enjoy what we have. Okay? Nothing wrong with stuff. Let's enjoy what we have. It's healthy to be content. Let's have dreams. Let's have goals. Let's have ambition. But let's make it more than just for stuff so that we don't plunge ourselves into ruins. And let's be very, very much in tune with this, that awareness breeds discontentment. So you're going to have things popping up on your computer. They pay mega bucks to be able to do that. You see, listen, discontentment is managed by redirecting our pursuits. That's what it is. And so let me ask you this question. Would you please put someone ahead of your finances? I don't mean that you give them more and you keep half of it. I'm not talking about that. But just would you put someone ahead of your finances so that they will become first? And what you will experience is a great gain in your life, a mega gain. And that you can begin to give, not out of guilt, not out of guilt, but out of the fact that you truly want to lay hold of life. You want to experience life and life to the fullest. And if you do that, you know what? You'll enjoy what you have, but what you have will never have you. It'll never have you. And what you don't have won't bother you as much. Matter of fact, you know what you can do? You can celebrate with other people who have what you don't have. And you will lay hold of what truly life is. Don't you want that? Don't you want true life? I do. Don't you want a group of people who maybe have never met you and somebody will say, he's got a lot of money. And somebody pipes up and says, and he helps a lot of people with it. They have a lot of stuff. Yeah, but they help a lot of people with it. You see, you're going to leave everything behind. I'm going to leave everything behind. And I hope and I pray that we leave more than stuff. Would you pray with me? God, we thank you for who you are. And we recognize that every good and perfect gift comes from you. We recognize that you have given us all things for our enjoyment. You're not against stuff. You just don't want stuff to have us. And so I pray, God, for each and every one of us that you would speak to us, that there would be something that we would see and that we would be discontented with that which bothers you and that you're discontented and that we will say, you know what? I'm going to do something about that. I'm going to give. I'm going to invest. I'm going to pursue. And I'm going to take hold of what is truly life. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
If you want to talk to someone about a decision you've made or let us know how God's moving through this series, visit newpoint.org/contact. Be sure to stay connected with us throughout the week. You can find us on social media, download our app, or subscribe to our weekly podcast through the App Store or Google Play. Thanks for listening to today's message, and we hope you continue to realize and reach your full potential in Jesus Christ.